Can Trump reform sentencing? Are we paying China more tax dollars? And can the EU take care of itself? This is episode 10 of Another Podcast.
Your tears are delicious and your parties die.
I'm telling you, he says what I'm thinking.
That Rothbard libertarian, that Jefferson libertarian, you know I'm not messing libertarians.
And then we're going to Washington, D.C. and take back the White House.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Classical Liberal Podcast, episode 10, ladies and gentlemen. We made it to the top 10, number 10. Like, oh my God, can't believe it already. Thanks for tuning in to another great episode. I got a lot in store for you today, and I am happy to be back. I took my break, my little one-day break, missing an episode and a couple videos, but it was very, very relaxing. Before we get started today, gotta let you know about our sponsors over at Recuro.org. That's Recuro, R-E-C-U-R-O.org. Go check them out. Ladies and gentlemen, I can't tell you enough. Go check them out. A liberty-loving website, media, have podcasts, videos, articles, and we want your liberty-loving content. So if you have any content out there, give them a shout and go submit your articles. Or hey, just give me a direct message and I will get you to them. Spreading the message of liberty and pushing it in America is the most important thing right now. Because we see every single day that people are trying to use government more and more and more to infringe on your rights and infringe on your life every single day. Even Republicans do it. Even Democrats especially are going to do it. But what do we need to do? We need to fight back. We need to show people that we are not afraid to fight back against government, that we don't need government to hold our hand, that you don't need government to hold your hand. You are a responsible adult who takes care of the business and does what you want. So go to Recuro.org, submit your articles, submit your podcasts, and submit your videos. So guys, I'm going to go ahead and start the show today with a little story this past week. So some of my normal listeners who tune in every week, thank God for you. I went home back to my hometown in Clarksville, Tennessee, just to visit my family, because I know I'm going to be working and stuff on Thanksgiving and all that business. So I went down there to kind of go see them and just to kind of, you know, just see how everybody was doing. And I met up with a lot of great people, right? And as I was there doing my thing and talking to my family, hanging out with my friends, I met somebody that they're from the EU, and not going to really go give out their business, but they were complaining to me about how Americans and how young people themselves, how young people these days, how we do not want to work hard. And it was funny because another guy that I actually work with at my other job, other than this job, he was talking about the very same thing. And I'm like, oh my God, what the heck happened? There's no way that I cannot talk about this, because it's been brought to my attention again, yet again. And this is something that I've talked about before. You know, for some reason, people my age, you know, 21, 22, 25, all that, and a little bit younger, and some people in their 30s, you know, they spent their whole 20s doing this. A lot of people my age has gotten in their head that for them to be successful, it has to be given to them, right? Like, they have gotten in their head and they have used video games and drugs and memes and everything to kind of make that the cornerstone of their lives, right? And a lot of young people, a lot of people my age, I keep saying young people like I'm some kind of like older person. I'm not. But a lot of people my age, they don't get the fact that they must work hard for the things they truly care about and for the things that they really want to do in life, right? I mean, think about it this way. I look at myself and I'm like, okay, I want to push liberty. I see that a lot of people are following the road to government, which will lead my country down a path which we cannot return. It'll lead my kids, my future kids down a path, my future grandkids, and all my friends' kids that I love so dearly down a path that our country cannot take and cannot feasibly afford and serve all of its people, right? And I want to try to push and talk about those things. I want to be involved in election campaigns. I want to make sure that I'm involved in the conversation of legislature. So I work hard, even outside my other job, when I only get 4 or 5 hours of sleep, to push this stuff, to talk about these things, to be educated on these things, and grow every single day. And I work extremely hard for it. Maybe you can tell by my show, maybe you can tell by my posts, maybe you can tell by seeing me out at events. And that's what I love to do. That's what I feel like is morally right for me to do. And just like Jordan Peterson said, now I'm not going to follow my dream, like the dream that I can't really attain, you know, but I'm going to work hard to something that is moral, something that I think is like the utmost important thing in life. And that is my goal. The utmost important thing in my life is to help and learn and teach with people of America and maybe others to push the liberty movement, to not let government take control and lead to globalization and lead to, a complete government takeover in your life, right? And I look at my friends and I tell them what I'm doing. And I tell them the hours I spend and what I spend doing in those waking hours. And they can't believe it. They're like, oh my God, why do you read so much? Why do you record so much? Why do you go to work so much? Why is this? And it makes me mad because many of them are playing games and going out and drinking and they're depressed. And, you know, some of them are, you know, still living with their parents. And, you know, and it's like, dude, get up and do what you want. Like all my friends and even the two people that were from Europe who looks at us and says, Americans don't like to work, do they? Who says, you know, we can't really work that much. One of them said that they can't work past 8 hours or they will get taxed even more or their company will get taxed even more. Isn't that incredible? The place that you live in, America today, you're able to come here and you're able to work for what you want. And it doesn't matter how much you work. They don't care. It's your own body. It's your own labor. Work your ass off. And that's something that, you know, you have to appreciate and that we have to remember as young folks working hard and trying to, you know, become something of our lives. You know, like I said, I'm not going to follow my dream of being a drummer. You know, for a long time, I wanted to be a drummer and I thought I was pretty damn excellent at being a drummer. That's not feasible. I can't do that anymore. I have a lot of things that I've gotten into now that I can't do. But there is one thing that I can do, that I work hard to do, and that is push the liberty movement. That is talking about the important things around the world and the important things in our country. And that is feasible. And I can do that, right? You follow and you push for real things and you make real plans step by step by step. And let me tell you, it was really hard to discipline myself to make real plans, to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning, record a show, edit it, put a video out, go to my other job, continue to push the show, continue to talk to people. This is tough. It's not just a normal thing, you know. You sacrifice a lot in life to get what you want. And I think a lot of people are missing that. I think a lot of people are waiting till their 30s to sacrifice when you should be doing it now. You should be working hard towards your goal now. I don't need a funny college degree. I don't need any of that. You need your mindset. You need discipline. You need to push yourself. If those are the things you have to get, then go get them. But if not, don't. Push yourself every single day. And I'm not saying I'm the perfect person. There's some days I want to sleep in, and I do sleep in sometimes. But I try to get up. I try to discipline myself. I try to get the job done, right? And I just want to motivate you guys today and this morning to get up. To get up and do it. Do what you know you can do and work hard for it. Don't let anybody in these crazy memes sit around and tell you, oh, it's great for life to suck. You know, it's okay. There's over 1 million people's lives that's currently depressed and they're all sitting doing the same thing. So I'm going to do the same thing too. No. You be different every single day. You get up out of your bed and you do what you got to do to make a living and to make your life better. And I believe in every single one of you who are listening to this show or who, you know, just happen to watch the video. I believe that you can do wonders in this world. And I hope that you get that discipline and that kick in the ass that you need. So let's get on with the show. Enough of my little tyrant and my little thoughts about what's been swimming around my head since I've been driving back. So Wisconsin company is giving every employee a handgun for Christmas. And the leftists are, of course, angry about it. They are mad. How can this company, Ben Shot, that sells novelty glassware with bullets embedded, give their workers guns. The GIF idea is a part of an effort to promote personal safety and team building, the owner Ben Wolfgram told the newspaper. He said, for us, now, we have an entire armed staff. And he said, I think that's pretty good. And I think that's pretty good, too. And I don't understand why people are giving them shit for this. If a company wants to give some guns out, if a company wants to, you know, arm their employees, I'm okay with that. He says all they have is 16 full-time employees, and they'll be able to choose their pick of a revolver. And most employees has never shot before. But hey, guess what they're doing? They're giving them classes before they're giving them guns. So it's not like, hey, we're going to give you a gun, Merry Christmas. But yeah, no, they're not doing that. What they're actually doing is saying, hey, you got to go through the training class first, and then you get your gun. And even some of his employees even said they didn't want it. But now they're like, actually, I do. So I'm happy for this story. I'm happy that, you know, giving a gun to a person is not bad. As long as they go through the proper channels, you know, make sure they're all not crazy, which I'm hoping as a company, you know, with 16 employees, a small company like that, I'm hoping that he's kind of checked his people out and they're not all crazy. And if he wants to do that, fine. SJWs, get off his back, all right? We're tired of the Twitter, the tweets, and all that crap. It's crazy. It's crazy. You're being ridiculous, obviously. Kansas City health official bleached food meant for homeless. Volunteers came back with more. Okay. All right. So if anybody actually knows me, I have my biggest fear in life is being homeless, which is one of the reasons that drives me so much to work and to do what I do. And when I see a homeless person, right? When I see a homeless person, I simply want to help. I simply want to help, right? So the Kansas City Health Department hasn't made it easy for Free Hot Soup. If you don't know what Free Hot Soup is, check them out. It's a volunteer organization that feeds the homeless in public spaces. And they've been doing this for a while in Kansas. And the Kansas City Health Department has been following these folks in their locations of where they're going to be sharing the food so they can go stop these people. Okay? So these people reported that they brought chili sandwiches and soup and all these other different things. And when the health department came to tell them that they didn't have their permit, which, hey, by the way, they mentioned that the permit was free, so they should have been able to get it, right? But when they mentioned that, they dumped all their food that they cooked into a garbage bag and then put bleach in it so nobody can get it. What the hell? Like, what the crap? Like, can we honestly talk about this for a moment? People on American soil, we are trying to help them. You have people volunteering their time when they are off work or off doing whatever they're doing to come help and serve these people, right? Like, these people are just trying to help. These people are hungry. You know, people want us to rely on government organizations. Why is that? They can't even feed the homeless, but we have volunteer organizations. We have multiple volunteer organizations willing to help people that are just hungry. It's not like they're giving them shelter. It's not like they're building them homes. It's not like they're giving them a place to shoot up or anything like that. They are feeding them. They are giving an essential item in life that they need to survive. They need to do things to get energy. And we can't do that. We can't serve them. We can't help our poor. So the Kansas City Director of Health, Rex Archer, said the city can't allow food to be served publicly without affirming that the preparers are trained in safe food management, proper temperature controls, and other defenses against contamination, and have an expected kitchen. Really? So when I go out to do things, I can't eat in the public. No, I can't. I can't go out and eat my lunch in the park. I gotta make sure I cook that right. I gotta make sure I have the temperatures. I can't share my food with my coworkers. Oh no, I can't do that. No. I don't have that, you know, that permit that he wants me to get, or a really good kitchen. No. Little Jimmy, you can't have your birthday. You can't have your birthday in the park. I don't know where that cake came from. No. This is dumb, right? We help each other in America. We literally thrive on Americans helping other Americans and that volunteer association. We literally thrive on this. And this is another step that government has taken to take away our ability to help one another so they can have the upper hand. They want to throw red tape up everybody. Red tape this, red tape that, red tape this. And it's just ridiculous. Now, some people will say, well, Alex, what about those people who want to hurt homeless by feeding them poison in their food? Well, Alex, what about those people who just don't know how to cook and they, you know, what if they contaminate the beans and stuff like that? Oh, get over yourself. Get over yourself. That is so less likely to happen. That would have happened at your church event, for God's sake. Come on. You've been to church. You know those people back there cooking don't have no degrees. They don't have no permits. Come on. Get out of here. Listen, at the end of the day, we should help one another. At the end of the day, if we see somebody, you know, that's down and out and we have the labor and the money to help them, I believe you should. And I believe, especially when it comes to food, which is easily attainable from anybody and their grandma, it shouldn't be an issue. And I think, the Kansas City Director of Health, Mr. Rex Archer, need to go shove it, because obviously his organization cannot help people as much as the others. Obviously. And when they don't get the spotlight, nobody does. And that, my friends, is a shame. It's a shame. It's a shame. Trump backs sentencing for reform bill. He says that will give ex-inmates a second chance at life. I am excited for this. I am super, super excited for this. Now, we've been waiting. We have been waiting for years. Ever since after Bill Clinton, went ahead and reformed crime and sentencing and made it tough, especially on those black folks and minority communities that he so got all their votes and so wanted. He made it tougher on them for mainly most of them for nonviolent crimes and basically ruined many, many families. And Trump, the racist, that's right, Trump, the racist, wants to reform sentencing. So let's dive into it. So President Trump threw his support behind a bipartisan, that's right, you heard it, bipartisan bill to reform federal sentencing guidelines on Wednesday, which he said would reduce crime while giving our fellow citizens a chance at redemption. He says, we're all better off when former inmates can receive and reenter society as law-abiding, productive citizens. Okay. All right. And he says, thanks to our booming economy, they now have a chance at more opportunities than ever before. Yes, ladies and gentlemen. In fact, yes, this is a great thing. This is great. Who doesn't want to do this? Who doesn't want these people to have a better life? They're in jail for these massive amount of time for doing crap nothing. And they get out and they re-enter society and they're still stuck. But now we're talking about a bill that not only can lower the sentence, you know, whether it's federal and all that junk, and the timing of the sentence depending on the crime, and give more discretion to judge. So this act is called the First Step Act, the first major rewrite of the nation's criminal justice sentencing laws in a generation. It will boost rehabilitation efforts for federal prisoners and give judges more discretion when sentencing nonviolent offenders, particularly for drug offenses. Guys, this is great. My libertarian friends, this is great. This is something we've been waiting for. Sure, it's not giving us everything that we want. Obviously, we want a little bit more, but at least there's at least somebody in the government that's not just an advocate and someone who's pushing it. At least somebody that's actually in office sees, like, hey, this is wrong. What can we do about it? Obama had the time to do this. He didn't do it. Barely even mention it. Kind of, went around the circle and kind of said maybe he'll do something. Had a few conversations, but did nothing. But now here's Trump, the racist, the guy who doesn't care, right? The guy who's terrible, the orange man bad. This guy, he wants to do this. The bill lowers the mandatory minimum sentence for nonviolent repeated drug offenders from 25 to 20, reduces mandatory minimums for other crimes from 20 to 15 years, and makes no distinction between powder cocaine and crack cocaine. Americans from across the political spectrum can unite around prison reform legislation that will reduce crime while giving our fellow citizens a chance at redemption, said Trump, who at one point joked, did I hear the word bipartisan? Oh, man. This doesn't excite you. I mean, sure. 25 to 20, that's only 5 years. You know, 20 to 15, that's only 5 years. Whatever. But at least they're making an effort. While I think, you know, they should definitely lower it, you know, below 10, depending on, you know, at least make the mandatory minimum sentence for nonviolent drug offenders be like 10, maybe 5, maybe even nothing, depending on the crime. Because most of these crimes, of course, are, hey, non-freaking violent. So they shouldn't be in jail for their lives for a drug. For a drug. Like, come on. Are you kidding me? But there has been plans that Mitch McConnell may block something like this because he says that there are other things on the table to deal with other than people who are in jail for 25 years for a nonviolent crime. Because Mitch McConnell, obviously, he doesn't give a crap, right? He only cares about the GOP and whatever crappy thing that they want to try to do to the United States. So he's like, "Yeah, we don't really have that much time left in this year, so we might not be able to do it." And then Trump comes back with, "Hey, when you're ready, I'm ready. I have a pen waiting to sign it on my desk." So this is a great win for Trump, and this is a great win for against the drug war. Like I said, it doesn't fulfill everything that I would want to see. It doesn't give me all the great satisfaction that I would like to see the government take, but it's a nice first step, and it's a nice place to be. And if maybe someone can talk and push a different bill that maybe lowers sentences even more, that would be great. That would be perfect. Hell, take it off the table. Make them do community service or something. I just don't believe a lot of these nonviolent drug offenders should be put in jail for a very long time. I just don't think all their lives should be taken away. And I do think we should be building some kind of system to reintegrate these prisoners back into society. Because when prisoners get back out of, when they get out of jail, they're treated as third-rate citizens, right? They're treated as if they don't know that they made a mistake and that they spent their time in jail and it was terrible and now they want to rebuild their lives. And we don't give them that tool, you know, whether it's because they can't get the jobs that they need or whether because they can't do everything that they want to do. We, as a society, damn them. And so they're damned to repeat the very same offenses that was already illegal because that's the only thing they can do. It's the only thing they can do. And we damn them because of that. And I think making a bill that can reform sentencing, that can reform these people's lives, that can help them, is valuable. And I really think people should consider, no matter, and like I said, we're talking about non-violent drug offenders here. We're not talking about, you know, people who are out there killing and murdering people. We're talking about non-violent drug offenders. I just think they have a better place in society than where we place them. So hopefully we'll see something very, very soon. And I'll keep you guys a little bit updated. So before we go to the break, I have something, a little bit something to talk about. And it's one of the things that scare the crap out of me. It really does scare the crap out of me. Cause if anybody knows, have heard or listened to the show, you'll know that China is like the scary country for me. Like they are just, I read so much about China and, I fear them, not in the sense of that, you know, if America and China was to go at it, that we wouldn't win as America, because obviously, you know, America, but you know, they're just so authoritarian. They're just so crazy. They're so corrupt. The government is in every single body's life. They're and just how they treat their people. And like, when you see a lot of Chinese people, that they interview, when they're in China, they're just like all just like NPCs and they're just like, oh, it's crazy. It's crazy. Go watch some interviews, man. Like, they are just all the same. It's just like a blank slate comes out and they just fill it out with Chinese bullcrap. And, I can't tell you, but China sends a written response to U.S. trade reform. So China had delivered a written response to U.S. Demands for a wide ranging of trade reforms and from three U.S. governments. Government sources said on Wednesday, a move that could trigger negotiations and bring an end to the trade war. Right? Because we all know that Donald Trump, he imposed $250 billion on Chinese imports to force concessions from Beijing on a list of demands that will change the terms of trade between the two countries. Right? Which we've seen a lot of things, a lot of manufacturing things, and of course, a lot of our farming and stuff like that go up. They're having to pay more money to export all their stuff and their products, and so they're paying a lot more money to China than ever. Now we have the G20 summit coming up in Argentina at the end of November and early December. So and Trump and Jinping is supposed to meet. So we're gonna find out. We're gonna find out if these two can maybe start negotiations and start heading down that line of discussing it. I'm sure it's on their itinerary, and I'm sure that they're going to be speaking about it very, very soon to try to get this taken care of. But, you know, Donald Trump has, of course, railed against Beijing for a very long time now. Ever since he started running for president, he's been railing against them about their trade practices and how we kind of get the very crappy end of the deal. But since they sent these demands, since now we have them, there's a possibility that we can actually start to, I don't know, maybe, you know, maybe do something. But if we can't get something down on paper, or at least something talked about, the tariffs that are supposed to kick in on January 1st will go up to 25% from 25 to 10%. So it'd be at 35, it'll be set at 35%, because right now it's at 25 and it's set to go up 10% on January 1st. So, and that's another $267 billion worth if we fail to actually get this taken care of or get something on the road. So, and even you have Mike Pence trying to chime in and get something done. So this is important stuff. This is really important stuff. And hopefully this trade war can end. But the one thing about this trade war that pisses me off, you know, that we're supposed to be winning, is the fact that the Chinese are still getting a lot of our money. The Chinese has happened multiple times already. So some of you may have read the article on my page. When I found out, I had to talk about it, and I had to. There's no way around it. So Chinese-owned pork producer is getting a U.S. bailout money to protect it from China's tariffs. Now, how crazy is that? You read the title and you think to yourself, okay, we're putting tariffs on the Chinese because of their trade practices. And we have Chinese-owned companies here in America. So when they trade, do we give them money to protect them from the tariff war? Because that's what essentially Trump has done for a lot of these companies. He's started this trade war. He knew the company was going to be hurt, so he gave them a bailout, basically, to help them kind of compete during this time of the trade war. So a Chinese-owned pork producer will sell at least $240,000 worth of ham products to the federal government as part of the Trump administration's farm bailout program. Okay, the U.S. pork producer Smith & Field, which is owned by a Chinese conglomerate, WH Group, will sell 144,000 pounds of ham products to the federal government under the contract. So what the government does when it's looking for business or looking for something, they put out a contract, right? And this contract goes out to these wide range of companies, and they all have, of course, these qualifications that they must have in order to meet the government's contract. And then the government will pick the best one that they make the best deals with, because the company can produce whatever it may be. So the Department of Agriculture Department is purchasing the pork and other commodities for U.S. farmers to help offset the damage of the tariffs imposed by China this summer. And the administration has pitched this as a relief as a necessary short-term measure to help farmers during the battle. So, as I said before, we're literally in a war that we've caused, and now we're trying to give the taxpayer dollars, which was supposed to be helping us, the country, because of this tariff war, right? So the Agriculture Department announced that $7.5 million worth of awards under the purchase program on Wednesday, according to the notice released by the Department of Agriculture and Marketing Service, which is administrating the purchase of the program. And Smith & Field could receive more taxpayer dollars in subsequent rounds of purchasing program. The agency said in August that they would only buy $1.2 billion worth of products for farmers, including more than 500 million porks from producers, but the exact timing of the purchase has not been released. And the Trump administration has authorized $12 billion in overall spending for the bailout program, including direct cash payments to farms, particularly soybean producers. Now, that's already crazy, right? You start this trade war is going nuts. You don't know what's happening. And Chinese retaliate. They put more tariffs on us. So now everything goes up in the market because it doesn't really hurt. It doesn't look like it hurts the government, but it mainly hurts the people, mainly hurts the businesses. And then Trump goes around, the Trump administration, by the way, we're talking about fiscal conservatives, goes around and says, hey, here's $12 billion. Here's $12 billion. And we're gonna give it back to the people that we're hurting because we're so kind, because we're so generous, because we care so much about our businesses. We're gonna use taxpayer money to give back to the businesses that we're hurting because of a trade war. That sounds right, right? And since Smith and Field, apparently they're qualified for the bailout program because they're based in America, but they're owned by a Chinese conglomerate. And noting that and they made sure to note this. They said they're only purchasing products that are produced in the United States from Mr. Senator Grassley in Iowa, a farmer and a member of the Senate Agriculture Committee. He has expressed alarm that Chinese owned firm could benefit from bailout money intended to help American farmers survive the trade war with China. Duh! Hello? Yes. Yes, they're going to benefit from it. They qualify for the program. You're offering this program. They got the contract. They're going to give you 144,000 pounds worth of freaking of meat. And now you think that, hey, who was the government contractor who went out and investigated this company to see if this was going to happen? Who was it? Because did they not know that it was owned by Chinese, by the Chinese? Did they not know that they're only giving more money to the Chinese? They're like, come on, people. This is just so stupid. The tariffs are just so stupid. They go on to say that the USD Marketing Service said in a statement last month that products that we buy will be 100% American produced. In a separate statement, the USDA said the Central Communications Office said the agency could not control whether or not federal money given to the U.S. subsidiaries would enrich their Chinese owners. Yes, that's a basic answer for yes, it will enrich their Chinese owners. Yes, they're getting more. We're buying more. We're having to pay more for more products. Businesses are getting hurt and their money taken. And now on top of that, the Chinese get more of our tax dollars. Are we serious? Is this the life that we're living now? Is this how Trump's trade war is going to go? We're going to get hurt before it gets better, right? It's going to get worse first and then it's going to get good, right? That's the thought, because that's what tariffs do, right? Tariffs, that's such a smart idea. Come on, guys. We're better than this. All right. When we get back from the break, got a lot to talk about. Ranked choice voting. We got Germany to talk about. We got, you know, Facebook trying to make more legislation. And of course, we're going to talk a little bit about Brexit. So when we get back from the break, we'll talk more. And I'll see you guys then. Hey there, thanks for tuning in to the Classical Liberal Podcast. I'm glad you're enjoying the show. But I have to give a shout out to my sponsors at Recuro.org. Recuro.org is a liberty-loving website that promotes liberty articles, videos, and podcasts. So, once you go down to Recuro.org, that's Recuro.org, and give some support. And if you're a liberty lover and you make liberty content, go ahead and submit your content on the website, and then maybe you'll see your stuff on the site next to mine. Thanks, and enjoy the rest of the show. Second half of the Classical Liberal Podcast. I'm so happy you guys are still here and still ready to kick it for more great content and more things that are going on all around us. Guys, I'm having a hard time. I'm having a real hard time with conservatives lately. And I can't tell you, I can't explain to you how many conservatives that I know. And I was just thinking about this during the break, about, you know, how our conservative representatives, how they are no longer fiscally conservative, and they're not conservative to the point where they want the government out of your life, and where they want where they can be, you know, the political champion of ideas, right? And a lot of conservatives are like that once they get elected. And I find that more conservatives, or actually fiscally conservative, actually want thing to happen, they actually want limited government, are more of the voters and more people who are out being a business person and things like that. And every time I think about this, and I hear those other conservative supporters who are like, yeah, we have the best ideas, yeah, my representatives are doing the best, then why can they not compete in the realm of ideas? Why can they not? And the reason why I bring this up because of this next story that I'm bringing to you. So, a Maine Republican congressman, Bruce Poliquin, has filed a federal lawsuit in hopes of stopping the state's implementation of a new voting method from wrecking his re-election chances. In initial election returns, Poliquin is ahead of his Democratic challenger, Jared Golden, but just barely, 46% to 45%. And the problem for Poliquin is that under Maine's new ranked choice voting system, he has to surpass 50% plus one in order to win. And there are two other independent candidates in the race covering the spread between the two major parties and their candidates. Now, before you go on, before you ask me, what is ranked choice voting? Now, I have a really, really good friend, a mentor, and someone that I truly love that has been dying to tell me that ranked choice voting is the way to go. And every single time I talk to him about it, and every single time I go back and give him more information, I'm starting to agree with him. So I'm going to explain ranked choice voting for you right quick. Rather than choosing one candidate, voters are invited to rank their candidates in order of preference. So if no candidates gets 50%, they have a retallying of the ballots where the candidate with the least number of votes is dropped. So for those who voted for that candidate, their second choice, if they selected one, is tallied and their vote instead. And so it goes until one candidate gets the majority of the vote. So why are Republicans scared of this? This has been introduced around America. This is in several states. And even in my home state, the guy that I was talking to you about, he himself is even trying to push it and try to get this out. But why are Republicans, or let's just say politicians, so afraid to give voters their right? Why are politicians so afraid to compete in the arena of ideas to say, okay, sure, I didn't get the full vote. I didn't get the 50 plus one. So yeah, I'm okay with voters picking and choosing who they like from the top to the bottom. What is wrong with that? And Poliquin here, he's leading, right? He can very well win. He's 46% in. But no, he's suing because of this law, because that he has a chance to lose, because I'm guessing he knows very well that the independents, once they start losing and once they start getting cut because they didn't make the ballot, then the points may go to his opponent, and he's only leading by 1%. And it's crazy to think about, to be honest. It's super crazy to think about, because when I think of voting and me having to choose one person, it does seem kind of ridiculous. And the more and more I think about it, the more and more it makes the politician and make your representative be able and make them actually do their job and represent you, or they know they're not going to get the vote. Because Republicans, Democrats, they already think that your vote is theirs. But that's not true. The politicians literally think that just because you're a registered Democrat, because you're a registered Republican, or whatever you may be, that their vote is automatically yours and they shouldn't have to worry about. And politicians are scared of ranked choice voting because they know if they don't reach the mark, and they can get cut. They know if everybody else that's competing, which that's why a lot of states, a lot of people, especially Republican and Democrats, which they both work together, keep third parties off the ballot because they know that their asses are up to dry. They know that something can happen. They know they can lose their election, because once a politician gets elected, the number one thing to do is get reelected. And ranked choice voting can really put these politicians on their spot. It can really give more power to the voter, which why would you not want to give more power to the voter? It's crazy thinking. This guy, Paul Aquin, is trying to sue because he says that it's unconstitutional and that the Constitution doesn't necessarily contend to them. They said Article 1, Section 2 of the U.S. Constitution does not implement ranked choice voting. It says this section is set up that members of the House of Representatives shall be elected by the people, though it does not specifically state how the election should be decided, whether through a majority or plurality. Now, guys, listen. The people of Maine voted on this. The people of Maine wanted to vote like this. And I think they should. And it's their right, especially if they voted in and it's already being implemented on the state level. And this should continue. He knows he has a very high chance of losing. And I think he's scared and I think it's weak. And I think all the politicians out there who are scared of ranked choices, that means ranked choice voting, that means you are scared to lose because you're probably not doing your job. And you don't want the voter, the people you represent, to have more power, which they should. If you don't get behind ranked choice voting, that's a problem. It took me a while to do it, but I think you can as well. This guy, Paul Aquin, I hope he loses. I hope his lawsuit will fail, which it has been. Let's get it done. Go for ranked choice voting. It is super important. And I just wanted to bring that up for you guys today. So, in other news, another great and fabulous news. You guys haven't heard Brexit. You guys remember Brexit, that big thing where UK left the European Union, which basically left the UK in this kind of crazy, how can I put it, crazy aftermath of where they are becoming basically a free state. They're not part of the EU. They're not having to follow EU regulations when it comes to trading, when it comes to working, when it comes to border control, and all that jazz. So the EU, they're making their way. They're making their way to be better. And I'm sorry for that nasty sound you just heard. That must have been extremely gross in your ear. And I'm sure when I'm editing, I will hear that as well. But Prime Minister Theresa May is fighting to save the Brexit deal. Now, if you guys didn't hear, on Tuesday, the EU writers and, of course, the British writers, they kind of met and they finally came to a proposal. And then on that Wednesday, Miss May, she basically presented it to her cabinet, and the cabinet has now green-lighted for it to go. But she also has to take it to Parliament. And Parliament, she has to at least get 365 people in Parliament to actually agree with the plan to go forward. And it is not looking very well. It is looking absolutely terrible. With only 134 days left until Brexit, the time is running out for some kind of agreement. And they're mainly fighting over the customs agreement and, of course, the trade agreement, which are two huge things that they have to be able to hammer down before they can agree. And many people in Miss Theresa's party, they are basically saying no. They already had three secretaries of Brexit resign. And these people are basically the people who are trying to usher in and get everything done. And it's supposed to be the deal bearers and the information holders. But even three of them has left. And it's only been like, what, a year almost? And they have 134 days left to get this done. Now, what can we see? What can we see in the coming weeks if this doesn't happen? Now, we can see Theresa May being put down as the prime minister and having the Conservative Party pick a new prime minister. That could be a huge thing because she is failing at every single block. At every single block, she has been failing and she's been getting her butt kicked. And it's super sad to see. And the fact is, are they going to have a deal? Are they going to have a deal before the actual 134 days up? Like, once that is up, things can get really bad for a lot of our British friends over there, for a lot of our UK friends. Things can get extremely, extremely bad because on one side, you have the UK doing its thing, you know, British territories. Then you have Ireland, who is feeling kind of like ousted, you know, like this their own little area that's not getting enough money, enough deal in the trade, which was talked about, which they didn't really give specifics about why this deal was terrible. And of course, they kept that under wraps. But it's just a lot of infighting, a lot of infighting. And, you know, they can't get themselves together. This is what happens when you try to break apart from globalization, from this united thing. They should have just stayed by themselves. They should have just, you know, not gotten involved in this kind of stuff. right? I'm always behind when countries want to be, you know, just them, when they want to make agreements based on their people, based on what they want to do and not on a collective. I'm always happy about that. And I'm glad Brexit happened. I hope Brexit can survive. But if it doesn't, you're going to have ports, you know, ports filled up with products. You're going to have people having a hard time getting to work. You're going to have people having a hard time getting back and forth and traveling around the world. I mean, you're talking about the pound going down even more significantly than it already has. I mean, when this deal was announced, it went up. And then as soon as all these all these cabinet members and people like that started coming out against it, it went down again. So the pound is continually going down. They have no trade deals. They have no execution implementation of borders and how things are getting done. All this is very bad for the UK and could lead to devastation. And not only could it lead to devastation for them, for their economy, it can also lead to another referendum where they could vote to go back to the European Union. Right? It's like fear-mongering here in the US. Right? When we see something bad happen and something's going terribly, And you know, we're just leaving, we're just starting, and we're trying to get things, you know, cleared out, the closet clean, and we're trying to get everything looking great. And people start getting scared. They're like, oh my God, this is failing. Well, calm down. We haven't got a plan. Oh my God, this is bad. Calm down. We're trying to get this fire out too. And we're trying to get things together before it gets good, right? And people start getting scared. And this, now they're going to use it. The people, of course, who are against leaving Brexit because they like globalization. They like the EU together. Now, you know, this is going to happen. They're going to try to, and I honestly think before these 134 days are up, there is going to be some kind of push for another referendum and for another vote. And I think it's going to be very negative. I think it's going to be terrible. Brexit is a good idea, but yes, you have a lot to work out. The country has a lot to work out. And I think once it does work it out, I think it's going to be a better trading partner for the US, a better trading partner for the Europe. And I think the British people can get some kind of, you know, get some of their liberties back, get some of their kind of, you know, their owning back. You know, it's a good thing. There's nothing wrong with it. And I wish people would understand that. I just don't think being a part of this collective globalized crap, I don't think it helps at all, and not one little bit. I mean, it's just ridiculous. So maybe Theresa May, the prime minister, will get things together, or maybe she won't. Maybe we'll see the UK go back into the fold because they couldn't get things done, which could happen. It could definitely happen. So in other news, Facebook, folks, Facebook is creating more legislation. That's right. Facebook is partnering with France in order to talk about hate speech. Now, what is hate speech? Right? What do we define as hate speech? Is hate speech saying, "Hey, I hate you, you dumb black person"? Is that hateful? Yes. Should that be considered under legal text something that should not be said? No. Not at all. Matter of fact, I can care less if someone call me the N-word. I can care less if someone call my white friends, you know, a cracker or whatever it may be. I can care less. But if people want to make legislation out of it, I disagree. They say, no, you can't say the N-word. No, you can't say this. No, you can't force your opinion that you think, you know, the white people are the superior race. You know, those are things you should be able to say. Yes, I think they're wrong. And yeah, I think it's definitely opinionated, but I wouldn't put it under hate speech. And people are using hate speech as a terminology that basically says, hey, you're saying something that I don't like. You're saying something that I vehemently disagree with, and that we should legislate. And I don't think we should. I don't think we should be legislating that kind of language. And just like, you know, what Steven Crowder was saying, there's a difference between saying, you know, saying like, hey, this is what I think, and a call to action. Now, when we talk about those two things, so there's a difference between me saying, hey guys, black people are the best, and everybody else sucks, and white people sucks. Versus, hey guys, all white people sucks, and I suggest everyone goes and beat everybody up because I said so, and that's what we should do. So there's two differences. There's the call and action, there's a call of action, and there's just the opinionated speech. And speech, you should be able to say whatever you want, whether you're writing it or saying it, whatever, recording it. You should be able to say what you want when you want. But Mr. President, France President Macron, Emmanuel Macron, which he was just hit by an egg the other day, and Mark Zuckerberg, you know, the Facebook king, has announced on Monday a six-month partnership with Facebook aimed to figure out how the European Union, a European country, should police hate speech on the social network. So they're basically trying to come together a way to block people from saying things on Facebook, as if Facebook hasn't been blocking everything that we've been saying. You know, there's been a couple of posts that I've posted and a couple of videos that got denied for promotion and denied to be uploaded to Facebook because of the content. I uploaded it and then took it off. So, like, there's plenty of things that Facebook's already doing, and the French government is going to work with a six-month plan, and they're going to be meeting in Paris, Dublin, California, and many other places to have these regular meetings and talk about how Facebook can help with, you know, making sure that when they have elections, that there's not this unprecedented, you know, this unprecedented misinformation to the people, and how certain people's opinions can be taken down. And literally, you know, it says a French official who asked not to be named called the partnership an unprecedented experiment, and that would grant authorities insight into Facebook's processes to formulate recommendations that are concrete and operational. So Facebook is giving granted, we gave Facebook our information. We voluntarily got on Facebook and gave them information. We voluntarily give them our opinions. We voluntarily give them our videos and all that stuff that we find funny and what we like in life. So we give that information to them, and they are now giving it to the government, making a deal to give it with the government. And the government is going to tell Facebook what they think shouldn't be allowed to see in their countries, what they think is hate speech, what they consider to be hate speech, what can be anything, because according to people who use hate speech, who says hate speech is this thing, it can be literally anything they choose, literally. So we're having the government, because most of the time in Europe, most countries, they do have regulation in speech, things you cannot say, things that you will be fined and or jailed for, right? They do have these things in other countries. So don't think, you know, America has this. Why don't everybody else? Yeah. Why does everybody have this? Because other countries legitimately want to block what you say because they deem it to be bad. And now they're going to go to the internet and say, we're going to block what you see and what you say on the internet, especially if it's coming from other countries, to make sure that, you know, everything is nice and cool and everything is civil. What is civil about you, the government, blocking what we say? What is civil about that? That's not civil. That's an attack on your freedom of speech. That's an attack on your opinions, on your way of life, on your thought process. And no one cares, right? Even if you're wrong, even if you're the worst scumbag on the world, right? Like, no one truly and honestly cares. Like, come on. Be someone to tell you when it comes to that. But what I will say is that maybe Facebook will be like, no, guys, we don't need to do this. Maybe we should do something else, which I highly doubt. I highly doubt it, but it could. It's a dream. It's a dream that Facebook could see that the government is infringing on people's rights, infringing on different opinions, and you know, maybe this something will happen, but it won't. It won't. So I'm not gonna keep my hopes up too high. Last story of the show today that I wanted to talk about was something that I thought was pretty funny, and I thought was an amazing thing. Amazing things can happen. I'm tired. Excuse me. I don't know what's going on with me today, but I am tired of the U.S. being the world police. I am sick and tired of it. I am sick and tired of the U.S. wasting our military, sending our guys to random places, and using our 70-something bases around the world to hold world peace, to hold our enemies at bay, they say, to make sure that our enemies aren't taking over countries and doing bad things, they say. Are you serious right now, America? Are we serious? The EU recently, the German chancellor, and of course the French president, have both echoed that the EU should create its own army. Right after the ceremony of the end of the World War I with the world leaders in France, Merkel told EU lawmakers Tuesday that we have to work on the vision of one day creating a real European army. I love this idea. Who doesn't love this idea? Why, as a country, who is in trouble, who is in debt, who has people at home who are dying, who has people at home who don't have homes, who has veterans that they desperately need to take care of. Why in the world will we not want to support this? Why would Trump not want to support pulling back our troops from these countries, taking down some of these useless bases that are barely paying us money to stay there? What is the use? Oh, you say we're the superpower. I get that. I get that a lot. Oh, you say you want to maintain world peace. I get that too. But why does America has to be the center of all that? Why can we not work on ourselves, right? We go around worrying about other, if we went around worrying about every single body, we're going to be poor. We're not going to have any money. We're not going to have any resources to take care of ourselves. We take care of ourselves first. Just like I was talking about earlier on the show with the homeless thing and taking care of our homeless. We didn't take care of America. We spend too much money on our military. We spend too much money out and about in Europe and around the world in the Middle East doing nothing, ruining things, toppling governments, making trades that we're not supposed to, getting involved in things that we shouldn't. Sure, we can have an opinion about the world, but why do we have to have our boots on the soil? Why do we have to have all these people waste their time and do nothing over there? Right? Why do we have to have all 70 bases? This is ridiculous. This is crazy. If Europe wants to make an army, let them make an army. If they want to protect themselves from Russia or whoever else they want to protect themselves from, let them. I think they have the technology, I think they have the power, and I think they have the resources to do it. I don't think we need to be involved. And I don't understand why many Americans can't see that. And they talk about, bring the troops home. Bring the troops home. Why aren't our leaders not bringing the troops home? Why are our leaders spending all this time? It's not just the Democrats wasting money. It's the Republicans too. It's those very Republicans who sit around and tell you, hey, we're going to make sure your son and daughter is okay. Oh, I'm sorry that your son died in somewhere that he wasn't supposed to be. Oh, I care for the troops and for the veterans. No, you don't. You don't care. Honestly, you don't care. If you cared, you'll be working hard to bring them back home. If you cared, you'll be working hard to lower the spending that we're using across the world and focus that spending on taking care of veterans, taking care of things at home, taking care of our streets, you know, making ideas with these voluntary organizations, helping other people in America that wants to actually help these people, not government entities. I'm not talking about using taxpayer money and giving it to people. I'm talking about making plans. Investing in the people that makes your country great. Investing in the young men and women who are actually legitimately fighting for these old ass men in Congress and in the Senate and that send them off to war to fight for bullcrap. What are you? You want to be like John McCain? You want to run over countries? You want to topple governments because you think that's right? Do we think that's right? Is that liberty? Is that limited government? Is that protecting our own? Am I just going off just because I'm seeing something wrong? Please explain to me. Yes, I understand there are a lot of crazy stuff that happens in the world. There's a lot of dangerous people. There's a lot of bad people. But a lot of those bad people were created by us. They were created by the U.S., right? Because of what we did and why we were involved and when we were involved. When we're toppling governments, Syria, right? When we're starting wars not based on facts. Iraq. When we're staying longer and longer in places that we're not supposed to be. Libya, Afghanistan, other places in Africa that's not mentioned. All these operations that say that we're not in war, but yet we have men dying. We have men going out and doing missions that obviously involves combat, getting our young men and women killed. I'm not saying let's make our military the weakest military. I think a great defense is amazing. I think training our soldiers and giving them the equipment they need is awesome. And I think they can have that. They can have more of that without all these silly bases, without all these silly military exercises, without all these silly things that we continue to do daily. You know, our military and even our defense are, you know, those people who work in those departments, they're losing money, right? They just got audited. They don't know where, you know, $72 billion something dollars went to. Where is that going? Where's the money that's going for these bases? Can we get in our minds? Can we just get to the point in our lives when we say that our government is going too far? When we, yes, are looking like an empire. Yes. We are becoming an empire. That's what we're becoming right now. When we're more worried about taking over the world, more worried about toppling governments, more worried about make sure we have a base in every single country for freedom, for liberty, right? That's what our representatives, that's what our senators, that's what they give us. If this doesn't piss you off to the max, I don't know what to say to you. Because these are people that are, these are young men and women who could be here at home being innovators, entrepreneurs, doing things with their lives, you know, doing other things than going to get themselves killed, going and wasting their time in military bases. So the European Union wants to make their own army, go for it. If they want to ask us to leave their country, go for it. Because we should be here at home. We should be here at home taking care of our business because there is too much to do. And we're wasting time. We're wasting too much time. Thanks, guys, for tuning in this week to the Classical Liberal Podcast. I appreciate you guys coming over and hanging out and listening to the show. If you guys want to find me, you can find me at ShawDog21 on Twitter, or you can go to recuro.org, R-E-C-U-R-O.org. Look me up on Facebook, or look me up on YouTube at ShawDog21. I'll gladly love to have you. Like, share, and comment if you like the show, and share the show, and of course, leave me all your constructive criticism, and I would love to get back to you. Thank you guys for the support. Thank you guys for tuning in, and give me some suggestions. Tell me what you think. I want to know what you think about what's going on in our world, especially with our military and with our country becoming what we, something that we don't want to become, something that we ran from. So guys, give me your thoughts, and I will see you guys on Monday for another episode, and we're going to have a great time. Thank you. I'll see you later.